Hey everybody, Chad Wesley Smith here for Juggernaut Training Systems, bringing you the final episode for 2019 of the Jug Life podcast. And as we have done for the last few years, Max and I are going to recap our top strength stories of the year, talking about, you know, the biggest lifts, the most important lifters, the controversial issues, all that good stuff. So let us know in the comments what you think is the most important strength story of the year, most important lifter, whatever you want. This week's episode is brought to you by Roan. If you're looking for stylish, versatile, fashionable, all that good stuff clothing, visit Roan, Rhone.com/JugLife and use the code JugLife for 20% off at checkout. I got tons of stuff from them, so whether you're playing golf, whether you're going to the office, whether you're in the gym, whatever you're doing, Roan has some apparel that is right for you and going to have you looking good. Also, visit jtsstrength.com for all of your online coaching needs, powerlifting AI, power building AI, the new weightlifting AI, very, very soon to come, jiu-jitsu strengthening conditioning AI, plus all of our ebooks and Juggernaut apparel. Like the video, share the video, 5-star review on the podcast, all that good stuff. Enjoy the episode.
Coming to you from Orange County, California, this is the Jug Life Podcast with Max Ada and Chad Wesley Smith.
All right, buddy. So another year coming to a close, another fantastic year in the strength world.
Yeah.
And I know people were clamoring for us to be grunting and huffing and puffing like we were in the 2018 Top Strength Stories.
Classic.
Yeah.
A classic recap.
You want to just breathe really heavily during this one?
For those listeners at home, that was me deadlifting 850 for a triple. For those on YouTube, we just edited it out. Yeah.
Camera malfunction during that portion. I wonder how much of our audience is old enough to know of the Adam Sandler skit.
Oh, probably one hundredth of a percent.
Working out or having sex.
Yeah.
Those were two men doing squat thrusts.
Yeah. God, that's old, yeah. Man.
But the people who know what I'm talking about, they appreciate it.
And that's what Juggernaut is founded on. It's for the one guy that gets the joke. Yes.
It's not a references for the masses. You think was that a CD? You think that was like a Adam Sandler comedy CD?
Yeah, I think it was a CD like that, or maybe it was a track on one of his. I guess they were albums. I don't really know. Comedy albums. Yeah. Was that stuff done like after his SNL career?
Well,
before his rise to fame and like Big Daddy and stuff. Like, I don't know what that was.
They're all gonna laugh at you. Released September 28th, 1993.
Whoa. Long time ago.
Is it?
93.
Lunch Lady Land. So are these mostly his songs? I bet they were probably.
Yeah.
Let me look at this track list. Peruse this. The Beating of a High School Science Teacher.
I remember that one.
The Beating of a High School Bus Driver.
Yeah. God, think about those.
Beating of a High School Janitor. These would not go over as
well. No, not today. No.
Not nearly as well today.
Would not be allowed.
Teenage Love on the Phone.
God. Is that like the Comedian's ebook?
That's
like
the
Comedian's, like, you know, like, I got a CD of my best jokes.
But these had to mostly be his songs. I remember going on Napster.
another ancient device.
Yeah. Oh, he has a bunch of these albums.
Yeah, he's made most of his money off those albums. He's like the Jerky Boys. Most of his income has come from crank call CDs and cassettes.
Yeah, he's got five of these albums. So
wow.
So the Working Out or Having Sex has to be on one of them. I'm not gonna delve into which one it's on. But I definitely remember, like, you know, being in seventh grade, it's 1999, and I'm on Napster, 56K modem,
yeah,
and you know, downloading those like Adam Sandler tracks,
yeah,
and laughing my, you know, prepubescent ass off to them.
And you had like 15 downloads, 100 downloads going at once, and like, well, they're like, you know, 1K.
Yeah, because we only had one phone line.
Oh, so you're going to do it at night.
Yeah, so overnight, I would start like 50 and then hope that like 8 made it through the night.
There's a guy, there's probably some guy listening to this that was doing that that got caught and was arrested. Metallica sued him, right?
He just paid Lars Ulrich $150,000.
He just got done paying it off.
He's listening. He's
it wasn't like, that funny, actually. Yeah.
These fucking assholes laughing at my pain. All right, so top strength stories. If you haven't, you know, for the listeners, if you guys haven't checked out our previous installments of this, we did 2016, 17, 18, so our fourth year of this.
Fourth year.
Yeah, probably peaked at least 2 or 3 years ago. So let's just hop right into it. And these are in no particular order, but we'll lead off with weightlifting worlds. And you know, as I asked for suggestions from people on Instagram for this, there was a lot of individual stories that came out of weightlifting worlds. But since we only do 5 of these,
we couldn't. Too many.
Yeah, so just all of weightlifting worlds is one big story. So our sub stories,
sub highlights of the highlights.
Best of those has got to be Lasha.
Yeah, for sure.
He is really good at lifting things above his head.
Good lord. I think almost more impressive than the meet was his 255 kilo training total.
Yeah.
Just sort of like strolled in, does a 200 kilo snatch, takes a step back and realized everybody was watching him, so he's like, oh, let's do another one, and it would turn to a double, and then did the same with 210. So I mean,
he doubled 210?
Yeah, he did one, then he took a minute off and did cluster. Another. It was a cluster, yeah. I mean, he was ridiculous, so.
So but, he snatched what only 5 other men had done ever.
His session, if you just added all of his lifts together, it would have been a good super session. All his warm-ups. Uh-huh. He did the whole super session, basically, in just his training hall lifts. So that was pretty amazing.
I was most astounded, I think, by his broomstick-like treatment of 130 kilo muscle snatches.
I think he went to 140.
Yeah, he did 140 for a single, but he did 130 for a triple.
Yeah, and it didn't look... It was easy. I don't know if it was circa 2017 CWS Juggernaut Headquarters PR. Juggernaut Headquarters record muscle
gym
snatch.
Record, yes.
Level easy, but it was definitely easy.
He was wearing weightlifting shoes. I was wearing Sperry's, I think.
That's true. That's very true.
He probably warmed up.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he'd been...
Pussy.
Yeah, and He had been doing muscle snatches for years before, whereas you had not been doing muscle snatches for years.
Should I call him out?
Call him out on Instagram, see what he does.
My shoulders hurt just thinking about doing a muscle snatch right now. Okay, I think I just tore dislocated my AC joint just thinking about a muscle snatch. But yeah, he's phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I'm sure Lasha can probably pencil him in for our top 2020 stories as well for
when he
assaults the world records again at the Olympics. China was amazing there.
Big lifts. Tian Tao did huge numbers. Tian Tao is the guy going like 2 for 6. Like he's the guy that you're like, this guy, he's the home run hitter, right? Like swings and strikes out a lot, but when he hits them, it's like, oh shit, he just destroyed everybody. It's kind of fun watching him.
Is he the Jose Canseco?
Yes, weightlifting for sure. Probably on many levels, but like you know, just ridiculous numbers. But like you know, he missed and missed, then takes some giant jump, goes for the win.
The way that the Chinese lifters as a whole, Tian Tao, I guess stand out in that, but Liu as well.
Yeah,
the jumps
thing.
That they take,
that's
really and good. For Tian Tao to miss, like when he did the 230, right? He made 210.
Yeah.
Missed 220 and then made 230.
Yeah. Yeah. And only made one snatch.
Yeah.
It was like was on the verge of bombing in the snatch with 175, which something that looked like he power snatched 4 days earlier, and then comes out and does this, you know, like 2 for 6 performance or whatever. That's just like, you know, 3 for 6. Like, where did that come from? Liu was the same though. Liu his opener, right, is no good, then does 205, like a 14 kilo jump.
Wasn't the second 202?
202, sorry, yeah.
And then goes to 207.
Then he went to 207 for the win, right? Or the record, too. But yeah. It's just like ridiculous lifting. It's those like clutch lifts. I think that's what kind of for me is like the cool part. It's like those super clutch lifts where you'd see like, you know, another guy, I guess a segue, was Ilya Ilin in the 2014 Worlds where he went for like, you know, he misses a clean and jerk and now it's like he's, you know, his back's against the wall. He's going to be done. Everyone else is breaking records and he takes the final clean and jerk and it's just, you know, it could have been 300 kilos. He wasn't going to miss. He was just going to make that lift. And so it's cool to see that, like, you know, clutch lifting. These guys just doesn't work and put something they need on the bar and make it somehow.
Yeah, is that, I mean, that is unimaginable so, to think that someone's going to miss or to make a lift, go up 10 kilos, miss that, and go up another 10 kilos.
Yeah. It makes you wonder what the conversation going on between him and his coach, or even what his coaches are thinking. Like, what is wrong with this? Like, so frustrated.
Yeah, we're on the eve of American Open, which is going to be one of the best meets, I think, in American weightlifting history. There's just so much on the line for a lot of top lifters. And if someone was this weekend to make a lift, go up, just make a 10-kilo jump at all.
Oh, it would be ridiculous. It would,
the crowd would just be whispering about what a, at least if you and I were in the crowd, about what a fucking idiot that person was. And then they missed that, and they went up another 10 kilos. Everyone... Like, I almost think the marshals would, like, stop them. They're like, you're wrong. This is not allowed.
It's too much.
And then for them to actually do it.
It's, yeah. I mean, unbelievable. It's truly remarkable to see how great competitors they are.
Yeah, Xi Yang.
Yeah.
Right? He was...
Just powers his opener.
Yeah.
That's kind of like a giant middle finger to everybody in the field. Like,
yeah. And then, and the way he, like, stood, like, flexing after...
Yeah.
It was like he had just unfurled himself and just whap, whap, just slapped the rest of the competition in the face with his 190 kilo power clean. Deng Wei, I mean,
just dominating. The women are way more consistent than the men.
Yes.
The Chinese women. And they just, if they're in your class, you already know who wins. That's it. It's just over.
Yeah, and they're making 1,200 robies.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, those bottom four or five classes were like in the 1,200 range.
Yeah.
Right? 1,100, 1,200.
Deng Wei was over 1,200 robies.
Yeah.
She could make the U.S. Pan Am team twice with that.
That's probably true. Shit. I wonder if they give you two spots if your robies are high enough. It's kind of like, well, because we know robie bucks are basically the equivalent of tickets you get at an arcade. If you've got enough, you could get two kazoos. And that's really what you would get. 1,200 robies, well, that can get you two trips to Pan Ams.
Yeah. On a very brief lower note, low light maybe of Worlds, but still notable from the story part of things is Ilya there lifting.
He was there.
And it's interesting, and I really like Ilya as a guy in the very limited time I've spent with him. He must just love weightlifting.
Or he loves to hurt himself.
Well,
he gets off on, you know, people looking at him like, what happened?
So the way that Ilya Ilin lifting at Worlds, getting rocked around by clean and jerks that he's previously snatched.
Yeah.
The other sport parallel that I could think of is like Ricky Henderson. Ricky Henderson kept playing baseball until he was like 46 years old, and he's playing in some kind of like Kenny Powers Mexican league by the end of that. He couldn't have needed the money anymore.
Yeah.
Like, he just loves playing baseball.
Doing it,
Ilya Ilin loves lifting weights, I guess, whether it's a 250 kilo clean and jerk or a 190.
I guess, I can't think of any other thing. I mean,
because the ego part of it, like, I can't.
He doesn't strike me as somebody with a big ego either. Like, I mean, I'm sure he does have some ego, but like, it doesn't seem like he's trying to like prove anything. Like, he's still regarded as great too. It's not like people look at him like, oh my god, look at this guy doing 160, 190 in the B session in the 96s.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, it's Ilya Ilin, you know? He's still Ilya Ilin. It's very interesting. I'm really curious what his strategy here is going into the end of this quad. I mean,
there's no way
he's not even qualified, as far as I know.
Yeah.
I mean, unless he's a continental champion, unless there's some, you know, unless we see what the world needs, which is 109 kilo Ilya.
Yes.
Coming into the Asian Games, Asian, you know, Asian Championships here. takes out some, you know, 200, 250 lifts and just makes us all proud again.
Yeah. Back rippling with acne, looking like the fucking Himalaya mountains.
Looks like he just stepped out of an SPF SPF Pro-Am. Fire beanie even. I'd be okay with that if he threw the fire beanie on. He's got an Inzer singlet.
For him to do 200, 250 right now, his face would be as red as the fire beanie. He would have to be so fucking gassed. But yeah, it is kind of an interesting thing. Yeah. And on the U.S., I mean, the U.S. had a lot of positive things at Worlds, but
yeah,
stand out for sure, Kate Nye.
Yeah, Kate Nye, world champion. Second women's world champion we've had.
Yeah.
In the last, I would say of the like modern era, you know, post the rest of the world really catching up. And then Maddie Rogers, 3 times in a row medaling at Worlds.
Yeah.
Probably the most decorated female lifter of this era as well. Maybe, and then Robles obviously has an Olympics and a world, so. But right in there in the mix.
Yeah.
You know, fantastic from both of those guys.
So next story. Story number 2 is about athletes crossing over sports. And I think that this is a trend that's going to continue. And I wrote down Thor as the first one on this, and then I realized after the fact that was actually last year and something we talked about in the 2018
right.
recap. But it was like Thor.
What? Wait, did end. He? I think we were speculating what he was going to do.
No, he
had done it?
Yeah, end of November 2018.
Good Lord.
But that's almost 2019.
Yeah, basically.
He set the stage for Grant. I think the real notable ones were Graham Hicks, who competed at Big Dog. He's made 1,100 kilo total in his first ever powerlifting meet.
Holy shit.
And then Larry Wheels, you know, crossing over doing strongman.
Yeah.
Hurting himself. He seems to enjoy doing that.
Yeah.
He's really,
really proficient at it.
Yeah.
But somehow hurts himself, but doesn't seem to have any impact on it.
He regenerates.
Yeah. Dan Green was like that, too.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, what happened? Oh, I got shot in the leg the other day. Like, oh, I'm still going to pull 800.
Maybe they use the same rehab plan?
Probably. Yeah. Most likely same protocol.
Yeah. And we've talked some about athletes we'd like to see crossover. Weightlifting, like Lasha doing strongman would be awesome,
be cool.
Or Martin Seam doing a powerlifting meet,
yeah.
And I think that it definitely seems like with strongman to powerlifting that's going to be become more and more common.
I remember people talking about that years ago. I was on the internet one time, and I remember there was a lot of like
fortified iron forms.
Yeah,
go
probably
heavy.
Probably like a go heavy forms. There was a lot of chatter that if the pro strongmen went into powerlifting, they would dominate it. And you didn't really ever see it. I mean, you know, they kind of crossed over here and there. But I think seeing it now, like obviously, like what Thor did. I mean, and then if that continues on, you're only going to see giant numbers.
For sure, it will be interesting if there's the incentive for them to dedicate the time to it. It's not like powerlifting's that hard of a. They've all squatted, bench and deadlifted before, so it's not going to be this big learning curve for them. You know, I'm saying this as someone who did powerlifting and then strongman. There wasn't a huge learning curve that way either.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're very strong, it's easy to lift the very. It's easier to lift the very heavy things, but I think prime Eddie Hall was the one that everyone wanted to see.
Right,
and he's much slimmer now, so I don't know that.
Yeah, he's not training for any like strongman anymore. He's kind of over it. He's done.
Yeah, so maybe we'll see Thor do another one. I'd imagine Graham Hicks will be back at Big Dogs. I think I've seen Marcos, the meet director, mention a couple other strongmen who could be
Brian Shaw over. Pretty strong? I mean, as a powerlifting static lifts.
Deadlift, yes.
Yeah,
I can't speak obvious. To the other ones. Yeah. My guess is,
I would imagine a little bit less so in the bench, and those guys maybe don't squat as much either.
Yeah, I was always impressed with Thor's squatting. I mean, especially considering his height.
Yeah.
But how good his training squats when he was doing strongman were.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure on Brian. He's just had a lot of injuries too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, I didn't follow the strongman as much.
Yeah. Let me throw in an honorable mention to this of Jug Life guest.
Oh, yeah.
Martin Litsis, winning World Strongest Man. This is not one of the stories. This is an honorable mention story. But but that was awesome for him, for a guy who, you know, I got to see go from 240-ish pound amateur strongman And then for him to qualify for World's Strongest Man when he weighed 270 and just have this fast rise, and he's doing great stuff with it, getting himself out there and creating, you know, other kind of entertainment opportunities. And just a really hard-working, nice guy. So
what about other crossovers? Chad Wesley Smith from powerlifting through jiu-jitsu to bodybuilding or men's physique.
No, that
I'm seeing a lot more ab shots on the Instagram.
I have made
rightfully
it,
so.
I have transitioned from the when RP used to post stuff for me when I was really fat. Yeah.
They, friend of RP.
They would call me a friend of RP. And I have now made it into coupon code status.
Coupon code zone.
So
out of the friend zone.
Yeah. So the shirtless selfies are what's gonna that's what drives the sales. That's
you
what
hear
the
that,
people
guys?
Want.
To get out of the friend zone, more shirtless selfies. That's what they're looking for.
Out of the RP friend zone, at least.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what Nick wants. Yeah. Definitely Nick. Probably Mike, too.
Definitely Mike.
Yeah.
I'm not willing to do the things that Mike wants. But speaking of transitioning, well, that'll transition us right into our next story. Story number three, but again, no particular order. Politics and politics and powerlifting. So it was the lifestyle in 2019.
Surprising, you wouldn't expect this to make the list.
Yeah, I mean, if you have the internet and you follow powerlifting, you heard about a lot of people upset about a lot of things.
Yeah.
All the time.
Good Lord. Where do you start?
Yeah, so there are some, you know, kind of Me Too powerlifting type of stuff.
Oh,
with,
yeah, right.
You know, and some of it was probably 2018 as well, but finding out that coaches were, you know, abusing their power.
Unappropriately touching.
Yeah. they did not hashtag safe sport.
Yeah, you have to say it. You have to declare it.
Yeah. And so there was some of that. Then, like, the biggest piece of it, though, for sure,
trans stuff.
Yeah, the trans athlete policy in the USAPL has gone all the way to the U.S. Congress to some degree with Ilhan Omar.
Yeah.
Taking up the case for J.C. Cooper, who was denied, you know, a male-to-female transgender person. Again, let me apologize in advance because I'm going to fuck all these things up. But wanted to compete as a female, was denied that opportunity by the USAPL. Her congresswoman kind of caught wind of that, and that became a bigger thing. It was on, you know, powerlifting is making it onto the news.
Yeah.
Vice,
perhaps that's
Vice Sports and Vice News and all kind of things.
There's obviously a lot of controversy both ways. I mean, everybody has their opinion, and they'll let you know. But it is interesting because it's funny to see, like, kind of outside of powerlifting, how a subject or a story can go from being like this tiny little niche thing in, like, there's just the powerlifters know, to suddenly Congress, and now it's blown up. And I don't know what that does, you know, the ramification of that for powerlifting, but it is kind of one of those interesting things to think that, like, man, it doesn't take a lot once something catches on like that to really become, like, huge news. I mean, you know, regular news stations were covering that stuff, so.
It is probably the most publicized thing about powerlifting ever.
Right. More so than Ray's squat when he did that squat on ESPN.
Yeah.
This was a bigger deal. The question is, do you think that the congresswoman would probably, if she attended a powerlifting meet, would just drop all, just go, I can't do this, I'm out.
Yeah, but, you know, and there's athletes competing in other federations, not the USAPL, who then, like, broke those federations' records, which, side note to that, God, it pisses me off when they say world records.
Yes.
And they're not their federation records.
I have the world record of Washington. Washington State.
Of the people who do powerlifting in this one federation that only exists in three states.
Yeah.
But, you know, that people were competing, breaking records of some nature as transgender competitors, and then those records being, like, scrubbed after.
Oh, they stripped them. Oh.
In at least one of the cases that happened. Wow. And, I mean, it is.
It's brutal.
I'm glad that I don't run a powerlifting federation because it's.
What do you do, right?
Yeah, it's. You're going to piss a lot of people off either way.
Well, IOC has made their stance very clear. I mean, well, not very clear. They've made a stance that is opposing the stance that USAPL has made.
Yeah, and USAPL went against the IPF policy
right.
in this as well.
Right, so it's very interesting. It seems like it's going to be, I'm sure this will not sort itself out, you know, in the next, I'm going to say at least not in the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, the point that, I mean, one, transgender competitors should not be allowed to compete. It is not fair from a
right.
competitive situation. You can show whatever fucking studies you want. All the studies that they have about this stuff are for netball and endurance sports
and bandy. Yeah.
And they're not speed power sports. I'll give you a great example. True, here's a study for you. Laurel Hubbard.
Yeah.
Kind of average-ish men's weightlifter. Yeah. Transitions to female. Winning world medals.
Yeah.
Not only as a female, but as a 41-year-old female.
Yeah.
It's like 10 years past the prime.
Yeah.
That's the study that, you know, that's the data point that should be most significant to powerlifting.
Right.
Like, guys are better at lifting weights than women.
That's not
mind-blowing statement.
It's a very interesting... I mean, obviously, it's like everyone's going to form their opinion, but it's a very interesting thing because it's like, how do you accommodate, if you're trying to accommodate everybody, right, as your federation does, how do you set out to make something that is inclusive yet fair, and you know, it's impossible because you know we know the old saying that you know you can please some of the people some of the time, but and all the people some of the time and some of the people some of the time, right?
One of those is probably supposed to be none of the time, but
yeah. Well, you can
all the people none of the time.
All the people none of the time. No. It's all the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, but not all the people all the time.
Okay.
So, yeah, you're just stuck in this place where it's probably never going to be a situation where one group or one federation ever gets it right, because putting them in a separate category and saying, you know, trans people go in their own category against themselves, or, you know, it's they go in with the men, like, people are just going to be upset some way or the other, right?
Yeah, and the part for me that's so, like, frustrating seeing the discussions about it is the overwhelming majority of the outcry on the transgender people need to be allowed to lift is from people who don't actually compete in powerlifting, or compete at a very much a hobbyist level.
Yes.
And if you're a hobbyist in powerlifting, that's fine and great, and that's probably a lot of the listeners. So if you're going to nationals and you're getting, or you're at your local meet, and instead of getting third place at your local meet, you get fourth place because a transgender competitor beat you, your day is probably not ruined by that. But if a world team competitor loses their world team spot, it goes from first in the nation to second in the nation because they lost to a transgender competitor, that's a big deal.
Which is actually funny, especially when you reference Laurel Hubbard, because in USAPL, that's not even happening. There's no one transitioning that's going to beat, you know, I mean, there's no one, that's not happening at that level, that elite level. Yeah. But in weightlifting, it is, where it's allowed. And it's obvious that it's not right. So it's funny that, like, the evidence definitely leans towards that, clearly, right?
Yeah, and the other speed power sports stuff, like Fallon Fox is an MMA fighter, and without the skill, was in breaking women's skulls. And she did eventually actually get beat.
Yeah.
But that's because she was bad at fighting.
Right.
She was also bad at fighting when she was breaking the girl's skulls.
Right.
It was just because she was
so much stronger.
Yeah. And so it's a tough deal. You know, the 9 for 9 media made their post, which even though I agree that trans athletes should not be competing against women, and in the USAPL and the drug testing situation, like it's beyond just transgender, you know, when do they transition, what hormone levels. They're on both male to female and female to male are taking drugs that would require a TUE in the USAPL.
Yes. Yeah, that's the big one.
So if they get TUEs for that, where do you, that's just like, becomes like drawn? A slippery slope, right? Doctors are going to prescribe, testosterone to master's female lifters.
It's funny too. I mean, I guess from my perspective, having, we have horses in the race as well, but like you see it from the perspective of like, if it's more important for you to compete as a trans athlete, then there are other federations.
Yes.
And for all intents and purposes, if you know where you're going to place in the USAPL, if you're going to place 15th in USAPL, it's no difference than placing 15th in any other federation, right? It's not like there's some, there's nothing special about those places. I mean, obviously, the federation has different rules and maybe you prefer it, but like the reality is like choices have to be made and there's got to be something given on some point somewhere.
Well, yeah, and even if the transgender athletes came and competed in the USAPL and they said that was allowed, you're going to take the same drug test as everyone
sure.
else. Then they're all going to fail the drug test.
Yeah.
So it would then be effectively banned
right.
from competing as well. So like, and then right before nationals, there's all the stuff, 9 for 9 media, the fear her fight stuff. It's a lot of people mad about it.
Yeah, definitely.
And even though, there's no one who's disagreed with things the USAPL does more than me from a, about the sport of powerlifting. And that's the other thing to remember, that powerlifting and weightlifting are sports.
Yes.
They're not political forms. They're
elective activities.
Yes, they are who can lift the most weight within this set of rules. There was someone who commented the other day on a video, on one of our YouTube videos of Meg Scanlon, saying like, Zuby would smash this girl in head-to-head competition.
Who's Zuby?
My question exactly. I commented back, who is Zuby? And he said, this British national record holder in the deadlift. Huh. And I then went on to Google Zuby, and Zuby was like a British rapper, comedian.
Oh, yeah.
It was a man, not a transgender.
No, he was a man that
just signed up for women's competition.
Decided he was a woman for a day and took Hoover Point. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, who knows?
Yeah. It's, yeah. I mean, it's whatever. It is the situation things are in now. I think that going forward, the next couple of years will be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah. It was 3 years ago, probably, that we made our transgender athlete podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And
great podcast.
Yeah. I mean, not a lot of changes to much of the information in there. So I think still a worthwhile listen.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't put my stamp on everything that was said in it, but for the most part, I think it was
very factual.
Holding pretty strong.
Roan is the premier men's performance lifestyle brand, is designed for men who appreciate quality, comfortable clothing that fits how they live, work, and sweat. With styles for everything from the gym to the office, Roan is the go-to choice for men living an active lifestyle. So wherever your active lifestyle takes you, Roan makes something perfect for the occasion. In addition to Roan's top-rated training gear, they engineer elevated clothing that blends corner office class with sweatpant comfort. I've got tons of Roan gear myself. They started supporting the podcast a couple months ago, sent me some clothes. I've since then ordered 4 or 5 separate orders on my own, paying for the clothes myself because I like them so much. They have their new commuter collection. So if you're looking for something that you can wear to the office, you can wear out to drinks after, the commuter collection is going to be perfect for that. Roan's commuter collection is the superhero version of your everyday workwear, offering everything from pants, dress shirts, polos, vests. Roan is obsessive about clothing that is lightweight, comfortable, and wrinkle-free. The commuter collection is made to make Mondays feel like Fridays with its carefree maintenance, total comfort, and effortless style. So go to roan.com/juglife today and use promo code juglife to get 20% off your first purchase. That's rhone.com/juglife, promo code juglife for 20% off. roan.com/juglife, use the promo code juglife. I promise you, you will not be disappointed in the quality, style, and comfort of Roan apparel.
Next big story, powerlifting world records. A lot of them.
Mm.
Big ones.
Being set by a lot of women that used to be men.
lot of big world records. I think first and foremost, and the most recent of these, is the all-time total world record. Daniel Bell 1,142.5 kilos, 2,513 pounds.
God, that's so ridiculous.
Breaking Andrei Milanichev's record of just 2.5 kilos less than that. Which
Where was it?
Where was Dan Bills?
Yeah, where did he do it?
Somewhere in the Midwest, I'd imagine, at a WRPF meet.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the quality of the lifts in it, like, okay, the squat's right there. It wasn't bad. Maybe his knee's a little soft on the deadlift. If I was to have one complaint about it, the quality of the lifts was pretty solid. It was just that when Milanichev set the world record at Big Dogs, the first Big Dogs, you know, one of the biggest powerlifting meets in the world, to do it on that kind of stage is a bit more significant than, you know, what seemed like a relatively local meet. And obviously for weightlifting, you can't, you know, you can't set world records and at a backyard kind of meet. And
backyard meet.
Not even if it's of the century.
Of the century.
What about of the millennia? Is that allowed?
Yeah, or the backyard meet for the millennials. I think the last time I saw Dan Bell, his finger was caught under Zahir's bar.
At the U.S. Open, the first U.S. Open.
Yeah, that was a blood-curdling scream.
Yeah, I'm surprised that it did not chop his finger off.
Yeah, and it would have been hard for him to make that
400-kilo deadlift with missing a finger.
That's incredible.
Yeah, so that's big and historic.
Yeah.
You know, I hope that Dan goes to U.S. Open or Big Dogs and tribute meet, one of those, and is able to replicate that type of performance in a very competitive environment. Yuri Belkin, he's good at powerlifting.
Yeah,
he is remarkably, astoundingly good. I mean, at 105 kilos body weight, he's beating my best total by 16 kilos, maybe?
Good God.
No, 11 kilos.
Like his deadlifts are just unreal.
Yeah, 1,066 in the 110 kilo class at Big Dogs, competing against guys who outweighed him by 40 to 70 kilos.
Think about it, because he walks around at like 105 kilos.
Yeah, he's clearly not cutting weight.
He's not cutting any weight. If he was doing the same things that a lot of people are, if he was cutting down to, 230 down to 198, if he's dieting and cutting, think of how ridiculous he is.
Yeah.
24-hour weigh-in. I mean, it's like unbelievable.
He'd be making 1,000 kilo total in the 90 kilo class.
That's unreal.
Yeah. 1,066 at 110, like 1,055 or something at 100 kilos. Holy shit, yeah. He is the closest. Yeah, I feel confident in saying he is the closest thing to Ed Cohen going.
For sure.
The quality of his lifts are unquestioned.
Yeah.
You know, just so precise. Like watching him in the back room at the US Open warm up to sumo deadlift was it's a work of art.
Yeah.
Yeah. And very nice, unassuming guy, very humble seeming, and he goes and he wants to compete. He wants to lift against the best lifters.
That's the cool part.
To make the podium at Big Dogs with that caliber of lifter and he's the lightest guy by at least 40 kilos.
Yeah,
geez. At least 40 kilos and still making those.
Man, the Russians they just have such great lifters.
Yeah.
I mean, so many guys like that. Remember Belyev and stuff back then? Like, just technically flawless and incredibly strong.
Yeah. If the kids out there, they've been powerlifting for 2 years, they don't know Andrei Belyev.
Yeah.
Spaceman.
Yeah.
Konstantin Pozdiv.
Oh, yeah. Fisherman. The Fisherman.
Konstantin Pozdiv's teeth are so fucked up.
That's just
like
a fact.
12 different directions.
It's just a fact.
Really nice guy. Andrei Belyev, we spent a week around in Australia. I didn't hear him say one word.
Well, you didn't need to.
Yeah.
He lets his lifting do the talking.
He was unbelievably strong. But yeah, the kids need to educate
Google
themselves.
Google those guys.
With some Andrei Belyev.
Good God.
Bench like 550. Yeah.
His own liftoff.
Yeah. Weighed like 95 kilos and bench 550.
Yeah.
Why did the Russians not like cutting weight?
I don't know. That's interesting, right?
Because he had the 100 kilo total world record, but he only weighed like 94 or something.
Yeah. I'm really curious about that because the numbers they did were unbelievable.
Yeah.
At those body weights, and considering they didn't even do any kind of weight cut.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Cutting 4 kilos or 4.5 kilos down to 90 kilo class.
Right.
That's nothing.
It's crazy. It's absolutely crazy.
Other big record, Kaylor Willem. I mean, just every time he's on the platform, he's setting deadlift world records.
Man, his deadlift is unbelievable.
Yeah, he just did 440 training deadlift the other day. Yeah, and he's the progress, the deadlift as a whole is where the most remarkable progress to me.
Yeah.
In powerlifting and strongman, like.
I think it's because it seemed like for years it wasn't going anywhere, and squat and bench records to some degree a little bit were moving. But squat records were moving like insane. Squat records just always been this like steamroller, just climbing up. And that's, I would, in my opinion, attribute a lot of that to like better training, better athletes, right? This obviously the combo of both, but like there's just, people are training probably better overall in that. And then you have like the bench records were, I mean, it was like Mendelsohn had the all-time super record for a while. And then Spodo came along, and dude. Yeah, it was a long time.
Yeah, I think he said it in 1997 or something.
Right, and prior to him, it was probably Henderson. And that was, you know, again, probably years before that. Spodo comes along, breaks it. Then Sarchev breaks it. And so, like, that's moving up in those regards. But, like, the deadlift was, like, it was Cohen. And, like, the Russian guys were always, Believ was in there, like, kind of, like, scratching away at it, chipping away at him, Pozdiv. But then it wasn't like something that was moving, but now it's like every weekend you see somebody's pulling something closer to 1,000 pounds.
Yeah, Belkin and those lower weight class records or middle weight class records, 100, 110 kilo classes, Belkin and Willem have just taken them to an unbelievable level. Yeah.
I wonder though what like Eddie would have pulled on a deadlift bar with 24-hour weigh-in.
For sure.
Probably 1,000. I mean, it wouldn't be surprising.
Yeah, I think it's very, very safe to say.
Yeah.
Extremely reliable to say.
Yeah.
That when he made 2402 total at 220 body weight.
Yeah.
Squatting in single ply, old single ply, shitty reps, benching raw, deadlifting raw, 2 hour weigh in, stiff bar.
Yeah.
Walked out, all that stuff. Give him a 24-hour weigh in and just a moderate weight cut. You know. Cut from 235 to 220. Nothing.
Yeah.
By give him a squat bar, give him a monolift, give him a deadlift bar.
Yeah.
And just the benefit that comes with 24-hour weigh-in, because he might have even cut some in the 2-hour weigh-in.
Yeah.
He's going to make at least the
total he had with the new minor equipment.
Yeah, the new knee wraps, the squat bar, and the deadlift bar are going to make up for the single-ply squat suit at minimum.
Oh, yeah.
So we're talking at least 2402 at 220, which is still above Belkin's record, because 2402 would be like 1,090 kilos. So he's still 25 kilos past Belkin.
Yeah.
And realistically, he probably would have done even more.
Yeah.
Yeah. For sure. He's at least 1,100 kilos at.
Well, training with a deadlift bar as well.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a huge difference there for him. The
901 deadlift was a second attempt. He missed 930 on the third.
Yeah. Didn't you say he pulled 900 for a double in training, too? So, I mean,
Well, what I do appreciate very much about Belkin's record and Willem's record is that some of those deadlift records were getting broken by the Russian guys.
Yeah.
It was in deadlift only
stuff
where all of Ed's were in full meets. Is that Belkin and Willem are doing theirs in full meets.
Yeah, absolutely.
And or not, I mean, Kaylor a little bit more so as like a deadlift specialist, but he's a very strong bench presser.
Yeah, he's not bad at the other lifts. I mean,
he benched like 490 at the record breakers.
Yeah, he's impressive.
Speaking of a small side note in regards to record breakers, the judging there is very bad. I don't know if you were aware.
There was the squat that you sent me it was like, hey, check this squat out. It's high. Well, that may not have been the exact words, but I watched it, and I'm expecting a squat that's high. I'm expecting a high squat, which to me is like, you look at it and you're like, oh, like, yeah, that was high. But I think he only went up. He never actually bent his knees. It was truly remarkable that he squatted, you know, I don't remember how much it was, but the guy squatted down like barely to like his hamstrings, this bottom surface of his hamstring being parallel to the floor.
That's you're being generous.
It was so high. It was higher than most people start their sumo deadlifts.
As I was asking people for suggestions about, you know, what they thought the top stories were on Instagram, someone replied to it saying something about record breakers and that they weren't having it next year.
Yeah, I saw Jesse on his story said that he's not going to host any more powerlifting meets.
Okay.
So I'm assuming it's from comments like we just made criticizing the judging.
And to be honest, like, Jesse is our friend. Yeah. I like Jesse. They're, you know, let's separate the idea of people being bad people and doing powerlifting to shitty standards.
Yeah.
It's good that they're not having that meet anymore because the people who are judging there either don't care or don't know what the fuck they're looking at.
I think sometimes from my limited experience.
And that's a year after year after year.
I think what happens is you put like the pseudo like celebrity judges or you just put the wrong, you need an asshole, right?
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I don't know if you knew this, my last name, the acronym AITA, stands for Am I the Asshole? But you need somebody to be the dickhead who's going to be like, that's a bad lift. Because if no one's that person, then everybody's probably too nice. Like, you know, like you watch the, everyone's in the seats, like they don't want to be the jerk who fucking red lights somebody, it's like, and so then it slips and slips and slips, and it's before you know it, it's out of your control.
Yeah, and then you have, you know, SPF powerlifting in 2011. You give them an inch and they take a mile. And part of, you know, the blame falls to both the lifter and the judge, in my opinion, because, yeah, passing shitty lifts is bad, but going to meets where you know that shitty lifts are going to get passed and then doing the lift as shitty as you can.
He went there with malice and forethought. Yeah, like he was going to squat high. He was like, I'm...
Because the one, and I don't remember that, I don't know who it was who was doing that, but the depth that this particular squat that got whites, you know, was, it was not the, like... I went down and oh man, it was really heavy, so I cut it a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, no, it was the depth that you intentionally squatted high as fucking shit.
Yeah.
Because
there's a lot of that, like the really high. I mean, fuck, there's high squats in powerlifting news, but like it's just that it's bizarre that like I remember thinking this thought back when raw was not a thing, like it was really small, and we knew that like the degradation of squat height or squat depth was a byproduct of the equipment. But it was also a byproduct of the judging, where they let it happen. And it was more so the judging than anything else. What happened was, you know, okay, multiply equipment, this kind of stuff kind of phased out. My thought was, what's to stop raw lifting from doing the same thing in 5 years or 10 years once people reach this point of, like, that's as strong as most people get. And it's like you're talking about smaller incremental improvement between people. There's just more competition. Or is there going to be something where people just kind of start to get more lax and, you know, and then eventually raw lifting is like, they're squatting as high as multiply guys used to and lifting bigger numbers and, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there were squats passed at that meet that would have made the SPF squat compilation video. Classic.
Yeah,
classic
another video to Google for you youngsters.
Yeah. Other records, Julius Maddox. Yeah.
That's maybe the most impressive thing. I Julius Maddox bench press, 744. I didn't know what happened, and I saw a thing come up with a, you know, Julius Maddox training for 800 bench press, and I was like, oh, okay, like, let me see this. And I knew he was strong, and then I see the 744, which was his second attempt, which was ridiculous. That may be one of the most impressive records set because of how far away it is from anything else.
Yeah, and, you know, props to Julius Maddox for, he had done it at the Boss of Bosses meet, and it was...
sketchy.
Yeah, it was shitty. And then he came back 2 months later and did it again, no question about it, and smashed it, and that's just a huge-ass strong man.
Yeah.
Like...
huge.
Yeah, so it'll be exciting to see where him as Coach Josh Bryant can help
cool.
him push that record, I mean, beyond 750, and...
You think he can do a 350? 770 bench?
What I'm most interested in is if that makes Kirill Sarachev be like, all right,
I gotta kill this guy. Oh no, come back to bench press.
Kill him in bench pressing. Figuratively kill him with bench pressing. Don't kill us, Kirill. If it lights that fire under Kirill to come back and train hard and do that, because when Kirill did the 7:38, he smashed that.
Yeah,
and
he had more in him for sure.
Yeah, he was young. He was like 25 years old when he did that.
Yeah,
and just so big and technical, and that would be a very fun to see them, trade that record back and forth until
amazing.
It goes to unfathomable numbers.
I mean, I'm trying to imagine what it would be like for someone to bench press 770, 800, somewhere in that. I mean, is it possible? Like,
Have you not heard the WPO? They're doing way more. They're doing way more than that, bro. For the women's records, far and away the most impressive, Mariana Gasparyara.
Yeah.
6'12 and a half total at 56 kilos. I believe it was higher than the men's world record total in the same class.
Holy shit.
And that is a 720.67 Wilkes.
Oh, God. That is impressive.
Yeah. She did it at the U.S. Open, so the most competitive meet that she could have done at, she did it there. And, that's
monstrous.
That's the best way to do the meets. Yeah. The best way to do a record is at the biggest meet possible and winning a bunch of money for it.
Yeah, other big ones too. Holcomb did a big,
huge
numbers. She is
unbelievably strong.
Ingram, sorry. She said Ingram, She did huge numbers. I imagine, I think Hawkins did a world record total at the Record Breakers as well. Maybe, or no, Boss of Bosses, maybe it was. But, I mean, just the women's lifting is insane right now.
Yeah, the acceleration, and to have a 720 raw with wraps Wilkes score is incredible, and it's also an indication that they need to reset the... Because I think
Wilkes... probably use IPF points.
So fourth place 181 girl can...
Yeah.
Be 1,000 points higher than
the
world record.
If they use IPF points, where would Gasparyana be now? 26th place in her weight class?
So, I look right into the camera for this. IPF points are the biggest crock of shit imaginable. They did a fucking terrible job designing this formula because they try and evenly distribute the amount of high scores per weight class, like depending on how many people are in that weight class. And it's what it tries to measure is the dominance of the lifter. So in the 84 kilo class, yes, Amanda Lawrence and Daniela Milo are exceptionally strong. The rest of that class in the world and historically is very poor. So they, while they are very strong, it measures how much better they are than everyone else. And because everyone else in their class is not that good, now it gives them so many more points. For Marissa Inda, 52 kilo world champion in 2017, former world record holder, who has totaled 430 kilos at 52 kilos, which the world record's 432 and a half. For her to equal Amanda Lawrence in the IPF points, she would need to total 480, 480 kilos, 50 kilos above the world record.
Mm.
A 50 kilo increase of the world record to equal Amanda Lawrence in IPF points. For a reference point, the 52 kilo lifters are getting screwed in IPF points because it's a historically deep competitive class. At the 2016 Worlds in Killeen, Texas, there were five women in the 52 kilo class with a 500 Wilkes or better. Marissa was fifth. She had a 499.97 Wilkes, so let's call it 500. Five with 500 or better. No other class had more than two. So it's very hard to be considered dominant in a class with great depth. Also, athletic women, if we were to distribute their body weights on a graph, the most athletic women are probably more in that 52 to 63, maybe 72 kilo range. You see the same thing in weightlifting. 81, 87 kilo class, very, very weak compared to, and lacking in depth. Which we talked about in our Worlds recap with the Roby point distribution. 49s, 55s, 59s, 64s, 15, 18 lifters deep with high Robys. 81s, 87s, three lifters deep, four lifters deep. Same thing for powerlifting. IPF points are the fucking shittiest formula ever. And it's made all these money meets that go by formula complete dog shit.
Yeah.
Last year at the Arnold, it was clear who the best lifter was.
Yeah.
Megan Scanlon was clearly the best lifter on the Grand Prix stage.
Yeah.
She wasn't even close to winning.
No. The IPF points.
Yeah.
Fantastic. They're a fantastic idea. The idea that you're going to decide not. But, yeah.
I mean, I know they couldn't have looks anymore because the guy was gone, but just give it a different name.
Use the same formula? You can't patent a formula.
Yeah.
Probably some fucking patent lawyer is going to comment on that comment.
IPF points are fucking terrible. Dog shit.
Worst system ever. Almost as bad as Robies and IPF points are just the most ridiculous things.
But at least when people are making these totals and you look at their Robie points, like, it makes sense.
Yeah. The Robies are at least distributed properly.
Yeah.
IPF points are just absolutely insane.
Yeah. They are terrible. Then the final story, and it's our podcast, so we get to do whatever we want. Final story is Juggernaut AI, the creation, the proliferation of, just to quickly highlight some of the standout results on the powerlifting side of things, the biggest total made by a Juggernaut AI user, to my knowledge, this year was Josh Gregory, who totaled 21.45 in the 275 class in reps.
Wow.
That's extremely strong. That's a...
Doing the AI program.
Yes, that is a world-class elite total that you can go to the U.S. Open with or Pro Raw or any of the biggest meets. When creating the AI system, it is designed that it can create programs for beginner lifters, the most beginner to the most advanced lifters. Like, that is what we created it for. And so I had no doubt that in its ability to create programs for extremely elite advanced lifters, extremely advanced elite lifters actually using it was a bit surprising to me, because I figured, oh, they're probably...
They have coaches. Or
the coach, or they're doing their own thing. They're making their own program. So 21.45 at 275 in reps. Matt Sherafinsky told 2,000 in the 275s in sleeves.
Wow.
He weighed 264.
2,000 total in sleeves.
Yeah. I mean, that's the elite stuff. Marcus K told 1980 at 242 in reps. Mallory Brown made the second highest total ever in the 47 kilo class and taking second at USAPL Raw Nationals. She told 793 in the 47 kilo class at 360 kilos at 47 kilos body weight. And again, that's number two all time in the USAPL, the second biggest after Heather Connor, 47 kilo class or 47 kilo total in history. So that's some of the highlights. There's, I think, been three or four 800 plus pound squats done with it, three or four 800 plus pound deadlifts done with it. Several guys making 250, almost 300 pound total PRs.
Insane.
So
how many people were at Raw Nationals?
I would 21 or so.
21 people going to Raw Nationals with the AI program. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Damn.
And now we are on depending on when people listen to this, the eve or the past fortnight of the release of the weightlifting AI program, which you and Garrett have been working on for
quite a while.
Almost a year, probably.
Almost a year, yeah.
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 And
solving different problems along the way. We started it with certain methods that caught us kind of painted into a corner, so we had to refine and turn around and go back and reassess the formulas and how we're doing things, and then eventually kind of started getting our stride and getting to where it needs to be. And now I'm really excited about it, because it's cool. It can do some really cool stuff. So
hear that, folks? Really cool stuff it can do.
Yeah.
Let's say I'm a 4'10", 49 kilo woman who has been weightlifting for 3 months. Can it make a program?
It can make a program for you. Yeah, it can make a program for anybody from who's just starting weightlifting to any of the team. Juggernaut would be fine with it. In fact, I think after American Open, Alex is going to start doing it and see how it works and help us troubleshoot it.
And the system that it's based on is like the exact process that you using to create their program.
Yeah, so like, you know, a while back, like me kind of really rethinking how I looked at stuff and coached and created programs forced me to do something that this AI process has forced me to do to like the, you know, the even more minute degree, which is I have to stop and like decide how do I define and look at programs. And then once I know like, what is it that I'm actually defining? What are these metrics we're using to measure a program? It's much easier to build something like the AI. If you build a program written out where it's like, oh, you know, on Mondays we do this snatch and on Wednesdays we do this, there's no real system. It's just like, it doesn't mean your answers are wrong. It's just you're using intuition and experience to build something.
Well, and what I found making the powerlifting one is those things that seem like intuition and experience really aren't.
Yes.
Every decision, yes, even if it seems intuitive because you're taking into account, well, this person is this way, and if they're this way, then I do this. If they're this way, then I do that. If this happens, then I do this.
Exactly.
And some of those decisions might have, you know, dozens or hundreds of those sequences to them. But as an experienced coach, you just know the answer.
Yes, right.
But
you don't know why you know the answer. You don't know exactly why. So this process of building it and something that's really cool, and to give Garrett a lot of credit, is, you know, me explaining what we're going to do and how I wanted to do it and him and I working together for the solution. It's shown me so much more, like, I know the analogy is silly, but like the way the thing is a lot like chess, where it's like you wouldn't play chess and just move things randomly. Where somebody who doesn't know what chess is or is inexperienced would watch and be like, oh, they're just moving pieces around. Like, I don't know, he just moved that because he wanted to move that thing. And so with this, there are so many pieces, so many layers of the system where, you know, we talk about just volume, like total number of reps in a month, total number of reps in a week, in a day, in a workout, and then the average size of a normal workout. How that, those factors all tie together. And if you adjust one thing, it pulls on five other things. And so we have to find a way to, we know all our variables, we know all the things we're going to move around and how they should be impacted by person's individual aspects, how tall they are, how heavy they are, how strong they are. What we did with the AI is basically create this like steering wheel, if you will, that takes all those factors into account and then steers the program in the right direction. Obviously, it has an intent to it. The program is designed to, you know, overload you and push you to new levels, but it's doing that in, you know, by controlling all these variables and steering them towards the person's most, you know, most necessary things, right? Finding weaknesses, addressing those, taking the right amount of volume, the right amount of intensity, and then adjusting them to dial it in for each person. So it's like really, it's a super complex, and so like it sounds like you're, oh, there's a bunch of moving parts, but it's cool because what we've done is taken all the moving parts, attached a lever to it, and then we can pull on those levers. And then we teach the robot, the machine, to pull on the levers for us. So you get the program you need.
I'm very excited to see it. We'll have the jiu-jitsu AI, so strength and conditioning for jiu-jitsu, not actually teaching you how to do jiu-jitsu, AI forthcoming as well. And then it'll be the super total, or power plus, which is like you want to do powerlifting plus something else.
Cool.
So bunch of stuff coming. Mobile apps, I swear they're coming. No one wants them to come out more than Garrett and I do. But I think hopefully from your explanation you just gave there, people understand that the shit's really complicated.
Yes.
Like it's not a template. There's so much going on in the background, and a lot of no single individual will ever see that unless they...
I have seen a lot of the programs we've spit out, and I have not seen two programs that look the same.
Yeah.
Even to the degree where you're like, that doesn't look like, these are completely different programs for people. And you can identify within it what's going on, right?
Yeah, so people go check those out. We're excited about that. And that's it, 2019. Yeah. That's everything you needed to know about 2019.
All of it.
See you 2020.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching to that, our final episode of 2019, the top strength stories of 2019. Let us know in the comments what you think the most important moment of 2019 in strength sports was. Visit roan.com. Support the people who support us. Get yourself some great looking clothing, rhone.com/juglife. Use the code JUGLIFE for 20% off and you can be looking sharp like me. Visit jtsstrength.com for all of your online coaching needs, weightlifting, the new weightlifting AI, powerlifting AI, powerbuilding AI, Super Total, all that good stuff, plus all of our books and Juggernaut apparel. Thanks for watching. Thanks for listening. Hit that thumbs up button. Share the episode with some friends, and we'll see you next time.